Are you with the crowd that wants to demolish Southern statues and burn Southern flags after praying for answers in the Temple of St. Lincoln?
We killed tens of thousands of American citizens, maybe hundreds of thousands, with no due process whatever in the Civil War, and it was the right thing to do.
Whoa! I thought you were one of the good guys. Maybe you should start going to church every day instead. Mike Church, that is.
It's good! It's good! It's good to see you all in church.
It's good to see you, too, here on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
Folks, it's the Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel, exclusively on the Crusade Channel, on our apps, via the iTunes, iPhone, iPad, for the Windows Phone, and for the Android device, at VeritasRadioNetwork.com and MikeChurch.com. You know what I'm going to do? I was asked back in 2010... It was requested of me that I stop playing two songs from the Mike Church Show band. I was told that they were insensitive to Islam, that they were insensitive to Muslims, and that SiriusXM Patriot Channel listeners did not want to hear such blasphemy, such insensitivity and political incorrectness aimed at our Muslim friends. You may recall this song, some of you. I haven't played it in 7 years. Here's a little snippet of it.
Ka-ka-ka-ka-Quran. Ka-ka-ka-ka-ka. My Quran. Can't you be mad? My Quran. I got him killing and beheading, bitching out of prison.
Ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-Quran.
I saw a restaurant. People having fun. Needed an excuse to blow into kingdom come. My Quran. It's my Quran.
We got them flying and a crash in America. They're bashing. Ka-ka-ka-ka-Quran.
Ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-Quran. Ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-Quran.
Where's my rocket launcher? I read from the first page of the Holy Book. Chapter 1, verse 1, it says, kill Americans. Oh, don't you do that with them in your household.
So, Nadja, has it not been played in 7 years? Here's the final verse.
In Afghanistan, the streets were so quiet. Soldier flushed Quran, now we can start a riot. It's my Quran.
We got them flying and a crashing. Jesus Christ, they're bashing.
I see a mannequin sleeping in his bed. Book of Quran set off with his head. It's my Quran.
Now, I won't tell you who it was that X'd me does not play that song. And as I said, that's the Mike Church Show band. That's a song that we wrote and did back in 2006, I think. I don't think that's on the anthology either. And I'll play you another one later. It's called Gitmo Rock. There's another one I was, you got to stop playing. You're, that's politically incorrect. We don't try. I couldn't say what I thought about the Quran on the Patriot Channel, and I couldn't say what I thought about the four Gospels and the Council of Trent on the SiriusXM Patriot Channel. But we can say it here on the Crusade Channel, and we thank God for that. Hey, if you'd like to join us, we'd love to have you. Please consider becoming a member to the Founders Pass. It's how we keep the lights on. It's how the internet keeps rattling and humming here. And it's how we bring you the Veritas Radio Network. Remember, we are a listener-owned distributist radio enterprise. And we'd like to have you, and we would appreciate your support by becoming a Founders Pass member today. Simple to do. Just go to veritasradionetwork.com/join and sign up by the month or by the year. You can also sign up for a 5-day free trial, don't cost nothing, will ultimately lead to a monthly membership. That's all at VeritasRadioNetwork.com, and you get instant download streaming access. If you missed the Andrew Bizzard interview that I just had in the last segment, and you want to get it later on today, or you want to play it for Aunt Petunia, what's easy to do? Become a Founders Pass member. And as an added bonus this month in July, we will ship you free of charge an autographed copy by yours truly, the editor and translator of the final 57 undiscovered pages of the best book ever written about humility, Humility of Heart. We'll ship it to you for free, don't cost nothing, simply as a gift for you becoming a Founders Pass member by the year. But the great gifts don't stop there. If you become a Founding Father level member or a Crusader level member, we will ship you a handmade in Michigan McClure block kitchen cutting board made from 100% Michigan hardwoods in Michigan made by Americans for becoming a Crusader or Founding Father level member or donating $500 to our crowdfunding efforts. We've had two $500 donations. We'll send those boards out thanks to our friend Papa Stuart Skrill for his donation. Papa, got a cutting board coming you and Mama's way. And thank you also to Kevin Harris, to Damian Zakornsky, and to Nathaniel Hughes for becoming Founders Pass members yesterday. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you. Simple to do. Go to VeritasRadioNetwork.com/join or call 866-483-3833. 866-483-3833. Veritas Radio Network, radio the way it should be. To the Dude Maker Hotline, say hello to Debbie Schlussel from DebbieDoesPolitics.com. And I'm sure Debbie didn't mind me playing a Coran song, did you, Debbie?
Oh, my God, I loved it. I was laughing so hard. You're really, I thought that was hilarious. You really have a great career as a comedian and as a singer, as a parody singer. I love that. You got to put that on YouTube. I want to put it up on my site. That is hilarious.
Well, my fear is that if I do that, that the Mohammedans will find me or they'll find my children and wreak havoc on me.
All right, that's a good point.
But, I will play it from time, but you know what? I should bear witness that I don't fear them. I'm not going to fear them. I don't know. I want to play you a clip real quick. And I'm glad that you're on the line because I know how much you love Megyn Kelly. you need to hear this, my dear. If you haven't heard this, now this you should put on your site and comment on it. And thanks to young Christopher for grabbing this for us.
If President Obama or the next president calls you into the Oval Office and says, any thoughts on diminishing the ideology, on stopping the radicalization, what do you say?
Well, what they need to do is, have the scholars, the Islamic scholars, step up their role, take the lead. If they're theologians, if they're running educational institutions where people are being taught this kind of interpretation, they need to correct that interpretation. They need to teach them the proper rules of interpretation. You don't take, an individual. What you're seeing now with these extremists is it's do-it-yourself Islam. It's an individual who goes to the Quran and decides, I'm going to take this piece and I'm going to apply it. And you become a vigilante. And that's what they're doing. So I think religious scholars and theologians need to take the lead when it comes to the theological side of things. When it comes to the military side of things, Muslim armies need to be the ones to be doing this. You know, it's great that the U.S. and the coalition are involved, but there need to be Muslim armies more involved.
Mm-hmm. Brad, you know what we
all... Okay, I say, that's great, Islamic apologists. That's great, jihad apologists. Can you... Now, are you surprised that that came from the Megyn Kelly show, Debbie?
I'm not surprised, and clearly she didn't give this guy too much of a hard time about it either. I mean, Islamic... The problem is that Islamic scholars and theologians are the ones who are preaching all of this stuff. And this guy claiming that this extremism is a misinterpretation of Islam, no.
It's not.
Islam is extreme. They are interpreting it the way Islam is interpreted.
But don't worry.
It's the dominant strain of Islam.
But don't worry, Debbie, because next she has Brad Thor on. And wait till you hear what Brad Thor has to say about this.
Not tell them what was causing their cancer. I mean, we've got a real problem here. And when you see attacks in Orlando, San Bernardino, in Brussels, and in Paris, that's cancer that is spread. We need to go to the heart of where this cancer is growing and cut it out. And we need our Muslim partners to go after it hardcore, because us non-Muslim, we cannot bring about a reformation in Islam. And that's what Islam needs. Christianity's had one. Judaism has had one. Islam is in desperate need of a
That's all that's needed, Debbie. Judaism had a reformation. Christianity had a reformation. All our wonderful, peace-loving friends in Islam need is a reformation.
Yeah, I mean, this Brad Thor, he's a novelist. He's a fiction writer, and we just heard more
fiction. Boy, howdy.
I don't know when he became an expert on anything, but we've been hearing the same baloney for years from a lot of these liberal, mealy-mouthed idiots saying that Islam needs reformation from within and all this stuff. No, that's Islam. Islam is not going to reform itself. It's like saying, you know, he had the cancer analogy right, because I've written about, I've used the cancer analogy for years. The problem is you can't reform cancer. Cancer is cancer. You don't say to the cancer cells, hey, cancer cells, stop metastasizing in my body. I need you to reform yourselves inside my body. No, you get chemo and you get radiation, or you cut the part off.
You get rid of it. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. And of course, you can hear Megyn Kelly in the background. Yeah. Oh, preach it, Brother Thor. Preach it. You know what the worst part about this is? She is allegedly a Roman Catholic sister of mine. She sat there and let him basically proclaim that the Reformation was a sort of holy writ, and that it was the greatest thing that ever happened because it reformed Christianity. Yeah, yeah, it made it less orthodox. It took the orthodoxy out of it, you imbecile. But she sat there and didn't have no reproach, no answer, nothing.
Because she doesn't know anything. She's an airhead. People say she's so smart. She is not. She didn't even know that there were honor killings in Islam until she read it on Michelle Frodkin's website, who also is a person that doesn't really know much. So if you have a moron learning from a moron about stuff that's basic history and basic information and facts, and you don't know anything, you're not going to respond to any of these people with any kind of reasonable responses, because you don't know anything. So you're just going to be from the uh-huh crowd. And the thing is that I don't know about her much about her Catholicism, but I don't think she can take communion from the church. She's divorced. She was divorced the first time.
Don't worry. Pope Francis has that covered. Don't worry. We serve all heretics, all apostates.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's right.
He gave the kosher seal of approval.
Good grief. I hope there's something decent playing at the Paradise Theater this weekend.
There is one movie I really liked and one I really hated. I'll start with the bigger one, which I really hated, which you guessed it, it's Ghostbusters. this movie is a bomb. It is horrible. I'm sure it'll do very well, so it won't bomb in terms of ticket sales, but it sucked. It's not funny. I laughed like maybe five times, and probably two or three of those were like, not really, like, spur-of-the-moment laughs. This is supposed to be a comedy. It's not funny. It's just incredibly stupid. And to chickify a movie that was a hit back in the 80s by just making the four men four women who are four unattractive women, by the way, doesn't make it a good movie, and the script is just awful. I think that Dan Aykroyd, Rick Moranis, Bill Murray, Ernie Hudson, and the late Harold Ramis can sit fat and happy as the retired, undefeated champions of Ghostbusters. This didn't do it for me. By the way, all of them, except obviously the late Harold Ramis, have cameos in the movie.
Okay.
Annie Potts also does, and so does Sigourney Weaver. But it was just a dumb movie. Those were like the only good parts of the movie, and they were very gimmicky, the cameos. So the story is that four women get together. At first, there's only three. One of them is Kristen Wiig, who's a partner of what's her name, Fat Chick McCarthy's, and
Melissa McCarthy. Right.
They were partners
McCarthy.
Studying the paranormal stuff, and then Kristen Wiig goes off to be a principal, I think, at either Princeton or Columbia, but some Ivy League school, and she wants Melissa McCarthy to take down some book that she put up as revenge about her belief in ghosts because it'll hurt you her chances to get tenure. But then they go to this house and they see a ghost, and there's a video that goes online with Kristen Wiig saying, "Oh my God, they really exist, ghosts exist," and she loses her tenure, so she has to go back to studying ghosts. And then they find all these ghosts and they start fighting them, and there are videos online, and suddenly people start calling them. And then they fight the ghosts, but soon the ghosts take over all of New York City and there's going to be an apocalypse, but they fight back with these stupid guns that work sometimes, don't work all the time. I like the guns in the first Ghostbusters better. The other thing is that they have this dim-witted secretary, so they're really trying to reverse all of the gender roles in movies. So they have this dim-witted, very good-looking secretary played by Chris Hemsworth, and he's just a total moron, and they ogle him the way men might ogle a pretty secretary in previous movies. But you know what? This attempt at gender role reversal, doesn't work. It falls flat. It's just stupid. And I couldn't get into this movie because I just thought I could feel my brain cells dying.
Let me guess. There is a off-color joke about not crossing the beams.
I don't remember anything like that in the movie.
Because in the first one, don't cross the beams. What happens when you cross the beams? You don't want to know, but don't cross the beams. That's how they get rid of the entity at the end. They cross the beams.
Oh,
so I'm thinking
there
women.
Was something like that in this movie.
Yeah, okay, I'm thinking women. They could make a some sort of sick, twisted joke. You know, a sex joke about not crossing the beams.
The women just. This is the thing. These women are not funny. And the jokes are not funny. It's really a juvenile movie. It looks like a four-year-old saw the original Ghostbusters.
Yeah, do you
and
know
some guy
the...
said, "Hey, little Johnny, make us a movie where they're women." And it just mostly people get slimed. It's dumb. I mean, they get slimed in the original movie. It was much funnier then.
Well, just think of the charm. One of the charms of the original movie is number one. Of course, you have Bill Murray in it. So that's
right.
Charm right there, Bill. Effin' Murray, okay?
Mm-hmm.
From Zombieland. Second thing is, this is when the age, this is before CGI took our lives over.
Right.
And this is at the beginning, just at the onset of the ability to use, to contract with ILM, Industrial Light and Magic, and have them make those beams, and have them make those guns work with the beams that they created. And it was cool. You know, back then, that stuff was cool. And now it's, that's a crappy special effect. You know, someone would say today, if you watched the original Ghostbusters movie. But again, you had great characters. You had Rick Moranis, you know, the shut-in, who wanted to date Sigourney Weaver. You had Sigourney Weaver, you know, the uppity snob, Upper West Side socialite. You know, you had the secretary, Annie Potts, you mentioned. You had, the Ghostbusters. I mean, Harold Ramis and Bill Murray are just funny. There's just no other way to just, they're just funny. And they were all, the Stripes, Caddyshack, Ghostbusters. It's just, it was a great movie. And I can't stand the fact that they think that they could relaunch these things. You want to just maybe digitize the old one and re-release it.
I agree with you. And if you look at the special effects in this movie, it looks like they haven't advanced since the time of the original, because the CGI is really terrible and it does look like it's from the 80s or from the Atari age. It's not anything special. I just found this movie to be horribly ridiculous.
So how many Idi Amin, Michelle Levon Robinsons do we give?
I think I'm just going to give this 2.5 to 3 Marxes and 3 Betty for Dan. It was dumb. But now to the good movie this weekend, and this was really good, is really good. It's called The Infiltrator. It actually opened on Wednesday.
Okay.
It's a true story. Now, a lot of people who've seen it, a lot of critics have said, oh, it's like the 80s. And, yeah, I agree. There's not a lot of new stuff in it, but this is a true story. It's what really happened. Most of it is true. I looked it up. It's based on the memoirs of Robert Mazur, who was a U.S. Customs Service agent who went undercover and brought down the corrupt bank, the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, which laundered money for a lot of drug dealers, drug cartels, and also a lot of Islamic terrorists. And by the way, it was an Islamic-owned and run bank. And he also took down a lot of the money launderers in the United States for Pablo Escobar and Manuel Noriega. And this movie is that story. And to me, it reminded me of some of the successful operations into stopping money laundering that the U.S. Customs Service did. And one of the ill effects of 9/11, you know, after the murder of 3,000 Americans and the mass destruction caused by the terrorists, they also got our government to create this massive Department of Homeland Security, which got rid of the U.S. Customs Service and basically morphed all of the agents into the old INS, and it's now called ICE. So now ICE doesn't do really any money laundering investigations anymore, and now that job has gone to the FBI, which isn't doing those investigations. So now pretty much if you want to money launder, it's a lot easier, I think. This was one of the heydays of federal law enforcement, I think. They did a really good job. The movie is very suspenseful. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. It's very bloody and very violent, so if you are faint of heart, I wouldn't recommend seeing it. It's definitely not for kids, but I think it's well done. The other thing I liked about it is the good guys are the good guys. The bad guys are the bad guys. There's no moral equivalence or shades of gray baloney that liberals usually give us. And in the end, the bad guys get it. The other thing is that the main guy, Robert Mazur, this U.S. Customs Service agent, he actually was a very honorable person. And when he goes undercover, for example, they give him the drug dealers get a prostitute to spend the night with him, and he does not want to be unfaithful to his real life wife. So he makes up an excuse that he has a fiance and he doesn't want to ruin the relationship, that he's already been married once and he screwed it up by cheating. I mean, he makes up all these stories. It just shows how honorable he is, because he did risk his life by not going along with that. Now, there are a couple of things I didn't like about it that are kind of minor. But one thing was that there was a guy in real life. In the movie, he's only in the movie for like maybe a minute. But in real life, he was integral to the operation, and Robert Mazur writes in his book that this man was vital to the operation. His name was Eric Wellman. He was a wealthy businessman who had lots of companies, and he allowed the customs agents to use his companies as legitimate cover for the money laundering. Like, he let these agents pretend that they own these companies, that they were officers of the companies. He gave them office space and made them officers and so on. And he didn't get paid anything for that. And, you know, this was a great risk to his family and his life. And they also do show, by the way, all the risks and sacrifices that these agents made and the risk to their families by doing these operations. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the thing I didn't like about it in the movie is they show Eric Wellman. In real life, he's a white guy. In the movie, he's black.
Shock.
And I feel like I'm tired of them doing this in movies. When they never do the reverse in the name of diversity.
That's right.
When is Owen Wilson going to get to play Martin Luther King Jr.? I'm getting tired of this. And
wait a minute. That's the joke of the day. Owen Wilson get to play Martin Luther King Jr.?
I mean, you know, why not? If they
why
can
not?
Do this,
I concur.
And, I mean, if you look at the pictures online of this guy, Eric Wellman, he was a good old boy, white guy, as white as, you know, as fair-skinned as they come, and he's a black guy in the movie. The other thing is that the woman who ultimately became the head of the U.S. Customs Service, Bonnie Tischler, is the boss of this guy in the movie, Robert Mazur, and she's not made to look good. She looks like she cut off the operation at the wrong time and jeopardized it, and then when it was successful, she took credit for it when she didn't do the work and so on. But she was the boss, and I feel like she was kind of defamed. I'm not a feminist. You know that.
That's right.
And okay. I believe only in merit, not plumbing. Not internal plumbing. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're a man or a woman, you should have earned the position. And one of the things I would say about Bonnie Tischler, I know a lot of agents who've worked for her and who knew her. She passed away 2005 at age 60 from breast cancer. She was one of those few women who actually earned her positions every step of the way. She was supposedly a very tough person, very shrewd, and a very good undercover operative and very good in law enforcement. She led a lot of successful operations. She was one of the first federal air marshals. She was what was then known...
Sky marshals or air
marshals?
Yes,
she was a sky marshal in 1970. And just a really good person, and she was the head of the U.S. Customs Service, and I felt like she was defamed a little bit in this movie, and she wasn't around to answer it. And then finally, the other thing that I didn't like about it, and again, these are all minor things. It's a great movie, and I recommend it, and I give it 3.5 Reagans, is that at the end of the movie, there are postscripts about what happened to everyone. They show their pictures. Of course, not the guy that was portrayed as a black guy. and they tell you what happened to everyone and what happened to the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, the BCCI. And there's kind of a really derisive comment about how the U.S. government used BCCI to have bank accounts to fund the Nicaraguan Contras, mm-hmm. which you and I know them as the Freedom Fighters. And I think that was a noble cause. And I'm glad we funded them. I'm glad we got rid of communist Daniel Ortega. I'm sorry that under George W. Bush, Daniel Ortega was allowed to reassume the throne in Nicaragua. I think it's important that we watch what's happening on our hemisphere and not allow communism to fester there.
Well, is it as good as The Big Short?
Way better than The Big Short.
Well, I thought The Big Short, I've seen it 3 times now. Because the story of the of just the deceit and the fraud that was going on that led to the 2007 crash just needs to be told.
And yeah, don't you think that movie was kind of a lie in that it only told half the story? It didn't show that the government required these banks to give loans to minorities who could and people with bad credit. Who could not afford the loans. And they didn't show that at all in the movie. They didn't show that there were all of these laws. And, you know, I know people who've owned banks at that time, and they said they would have the bank examiners coming into their bank every month looking at how many loans they made to women, how many loans
that's
they
right,
made
under
to
the CRA, the Community Reinvestment Act. That's my act. I'm the one pass that one. That's all
right.
I made.
And they didn't show that in the movie.
Well, they couldn't because it was made by Hollywood,
know,
by the Weinstein brothers.
The movie a lie to me.
Well, the part of it that they focus on, though, was spot on. And you're right. They could have gone on that. Maybe they should make The Big Short, too, and then do the other side of the CRA. You know, no one has made a movie about the CRA. No one's even made a documentary about the CRA the fact that you can directly link the Community Reinvestment Act is what I'm talking about. The Community Reinvestment Act can be directly linked to the crash of 2007. It's being used still today. HUD is still using it, still quoting it, and it's still browbeating realtors now to show properties and neighborhoods where people ultimately are not going to purchase homes. It's a waste of time.
I mean,
I know because my brother is a mortgage broker and my sister-in-law is a realtor. So I know what they do.
I mean, if they showed that in the movie or they made a movie about that, you would have the Black Loans Matter movement.
The Black Loans Matter.
You know, attacking everyone. And you might, you know, and worse things, there might be a Xavier Micah Johnson going after bankers, you know? I mean, I'm just saying, you can't, unfortunately, we can't tell the whole story in America. It's not politically correct.
Well, we'll tell it here on the Crusade Channel. Read Debbie's blog every day of the week at DebbieDoesPolitics.com. By the way, Debbie, I'm retracting my statement last Friday that I was going to go to the midnight premiere of the Star Trek movie. Because out of protest, I am not going to go sit through Mr. Sulu marrying his partner and a homosexual union being central to the storyline of Star Trek Beyond.
Well, you know that even George Takei is opposed to that.
Yes, I do know.
Honor him, and he is
right.
Opposed to it.
And George Takei said, "Don't do that." George Takei said, according to young Christopher, that Gene Roddenberry, that Roddenberry made Sulu androgynous and made him gay, basically, but not in your face. He just kind of, you know, okay, we have a gay character, but there's no, this is, you got to remember, this is the 23rd century. All these things, all these wars over, you know, your biology and your gender and all, that's already been fought. That's over. And that was Takei's point, that this isn't part of the Gene's vision for Star Trek. And I think that, and Takei said he thought that he thinks that the Gene Roddenberry would be outraged by what Simon Pegg and J.J. Abrams did. So I'm not going to go see it.
Well, Gene, he did say that, but I also saw a TV interview with Takei over this. And Takei said that Gene Roddenberry actually made Sulu straight. And he said he made him straight for a reason, and there is no reason to. In fact, here's a quote. He said, "Unfortunately, it's a twisting of Gene's creation to which he put in so much thought.
Right.
I think it's really unfortunate." And he said that it wasn't true to Roddenberry's original vision for Sulu. But in the TV interview I saw, he said that Roddenberry made him straight for a reason, and everything should be the way Roddenberry wanted it. So, yeah, I mean, regardless of what, you know, the interpretation of what Takei said, he obviously has more respect for the original story and the original vision and for the late Gene Roddenberry than these guys who made the movie. And by the way, the person who wrote the script is that unfunny actor who thinks he's funny and maybe sometimes is barely funny, Simon Pegg.
Right, right. And Christopher, what did Simon Pegg say about this? Simon Pegg was asked about that. What did he say about it? You read the story.
They said that the trend, I guess I'm paraphrasing, but what I remember him saying was that from the first movie on to this one, they hinted that Sulu was gay, so they had to continue with.
That's where I got that.
And
he
they
was,
also
they
did,
hinted that he was, but Debbie
I
says.
I never got the hint, I guess.
And they also said they did it in great gratitude for George Takei that they made George.
But Takei is the one who's going like, this,
know,
don't
but,
do
but,
it.
So it's basically like y'all forcing upon George Takei a great reverence or observance, but he doesn't want it because y'all ruining the movie.
Right, right. Well, they're not making Star Trek better. They're making it worse by doing that. They had a great cast. They have a great cast. Of course, we lost Anton Yelchin, the great little Ukrainian actor, so he won't be available to play Chekhov.
Because his car couldn't be put in park.
Right, right. So I'd say that the relaunch of the franchise is now just, you know, it's on the downswing. And we'll just have to watch reruns now. Anyways, I'm not going to go see the premiere because they had to put that in there, and they're shoving it in my face, so I'm going to shove it back. So I'm not going to go see it. But I'll look forward to your review regardless.
All right, cool. Well, you know, they're having an all-day marathon, and they told us that they're not showing the new one till 10 p.m. So I will go see it. It'll be interesting, and stay tuned.
All right, read Debbie's blog every day of the week at DebbieDoesPolitics.com. My dear, thank you. See you next week.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too. Appreciate you. Got to go, folks. 844-527-8723. You know why? Because we got to take a timeout. When we come back, Free Phone Friday continues. You know what that means? Your chance to weigh in on all this. After all we've talked about today, we should have packed phone lines when I return at 844-527-8723. Let me remind you, 3 new members per day is what we need to continue the build-up to 3,000 paid members, which was our goal when we launched in November 2011. Yesterday, we were blessed with 3 new members. Today, I hope that you will consider becoming a Founders Pass member at VeritasRadioNetwork.com. By the way, notice on the website now, we have news the way it should be. There are now news items and news articles that are happening right as the show progresses here on the front page at VeritasRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back. It's the Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel on Free Phone Friday, part of the Veritas Radio Network, radio and Free Phone Friday the way it should be.